My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Now, it's Jeffrey Wright and Company.
Tell your story.
Live on Memphis' sports station, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. I want to thank you all for listening wherever you may be. Of course, you can always listen on 92.9 FM ESPN or 680 AM. But if you're not near your radio dial and you want to keep up with all of the show's programming going on here at 92.9 FM ESPN, you can do so by downloading the Odyssey app. It's free to download, free to listen. You can even rewind if you missed a segment and go back and listen. It's all right there on the Odyssey app, so make sure you go download and use that to stay up to date with all that is happening here at 92.9 FM ESPN. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Sheila Sadeghi also helping out. She'll be with us tomorrow. Glad to have them with us. My company this week, former sports editor, former Tiger football beat writer, Mr. Do Everything over at the CA, also former associate AD in the athletic department for the University of Memphis, on Twitter, on X, at Phil_Stukenborg. Mr. Stukenborg, good day, sir.
Good afternoon.
Have the brothers started school yet?
Ooh, I don't think
the Owls have either.
Yeah, I don't think so, but it's close.
I know MUS scrimmaged last week. I think we scrimmaged Houston.
Yes.
I did not get the update. I'm a little worried about my Owls this year.
Yeah, I think Houston had a good day.
I'm a little worried about my Owls this year. But, of course, you can listen to those games on 790 The Bet this fall. I will be back. Hopefully Coach Ray will be with me. I think he's going to do home games, he said. So I'm excited about that. Love to go see Coach Ray. We'll have MUS games coming up this fall. Really, I think it's 2 weeks.
I think that's right.
Or maybe is it next week?
Where's John Varlis when you need him?
He's probably listening. John is an avid listener, and we thank John for doing so. Let's see. I used to have like the schedule bookmarked 2 weeks. Okay,
2 weeks.
Okay, so I don't have that panic attack of, oh yeah, I got to go learn a roster here. So high school football starting, I guess, in a couple of weeks. But wanted to start the show with the news that the White Sox heroically decided to make a change at the top. But really what it got Phil and I thinking about is, as a fan, what's the worst franchise to be a fan of? And kind of the other questions that it involves. And I want to go through some of that and apply it to not only the Grizzlies, but we could also take a look at how it applies in college sports, which theoretically is not professional sports, although it seems to be one that's masquerading not as, or it seems to be an unidentified. So we'll discuss how that might apply locally as well. Eric Hastein going to join the program like he does each and every Thursday. Team USA taking on Serbia in their semifinal. The winner will get France in the gold medal game. Right now, currently all tied up at 5 apiece, just about 30 seconds into the contest. We'll get Eric's thoughts, though, on perhaps in 2028, if we'll have a Grizzly on the national team, or perhaps multiple. We'll discuss that with him as well. We'll get into the list to start hour number two, get you an Olympic update. We also got an addition, or at least a reported addition, to the University of Memphis basketball staff. We're getting some leaked excerpts from Ian O'Connor's forthcoming Aaron Rodgers biography. Want to discuss a couple of things from that. We also had the 200-meter men's final. So I guess if you don't want to have that spoiled, we'll give you a heads up. Jason Smith will join us also during hour number two. We'll tell your story, and then we will indeed get out of here. We'll make way for the Gabe Kuhn Show. But I thought this was coming in, Phil. I was sitting there going, I was like, all right, is there a local angle? And obviously we are kind of, I think collectively, we're either in winding down Olympics, getting ready for, we got more preseason football tonight, but we're really kind of in getting ready for our football teams. And that seems to be kind of the mode that we're in. And nothing really creeps to mind. Then I see the news that indeed the White Sox fire Pedro Grifol. And in fairness to Pedro Grifol, I don't know if whoever you deem to be the greatest manager, either currently or of all time, I'm not really sure it would have made a heck of a bit of difference. When that roster was, I mean, we were talking about going into the year a historically bad roster, and then they sold at the trade deadline. So
everybody.
Correct. They were not only selling, they were kind of selling on the cheap. Like, they were just trying to do any and everything. And the White Sox happen to be in this kind of rare air that you see today where they have one owner of both the Bulls and the White Sox. And we still have, like, Stan Kroenke, who owns multiple franchises. We have, did the Haslams ever get in with the Bucks? I know they have the Browns, but
I know they had the Browns. I don't know about the Bucks.
I think they were trying to get the Bucks, but I don't know if that had gone through. You have a few people that own multiple franchises, but now that we've seen franchise values go up so much, it's pretty difficult to have one person own multiple. Well, the White Sox and the Bulls are in this crappy reality of they have an owner that is not tech rich. You know what I mean? Like, he's obviously, compared to the collective room, probably one of the richest guys we know. But by the standard of sports owner, not at least cash happy. Like, Jeannie Buss falls into the same category. Like, they're clearly rich. And if they sell their franchises, they're rich. They're even richer and they're at that level. But they're unwilling to do so. So instead, you wind up, the Bulls, it feels like, perpetually just live in this territory of, we're trying to make the play-in, and okay, maybe we give you some meaningful games in February and whatnot, but it's not really a fun place to be as a sports fan, where it kind of feels like to me, at least in football and basketball, see if you agree with this, I either want to be really good or I want to be really bad.
I've heard that argument many times.
Baseball, it's obviously a little bit different because, A, you don't have a salary cap, but, B, you know, just because you're bad, even though draft-wise it appeals to you, the Major League Baseball draft's a weird thing where the best player doesn't always go number one because whoever might have the number one pick might not be willing to spend what it takes, like, to go above slot value. And so you wind up not always having the best players collectively in the draft go in the order that they should.
Were the Bulls fun when Jimmy Butler was there?
I think the real question is when Derek was there.
Okay.
And when Derek's in his prime, you could talk yourself into that, but it was over so quickly. You know, Derek basically wins the MVP and you're sitting there going like, oh my God, this is our next guy. We're going to be awesome forever. And then bam, it's gone. When Jimmy's there, I think in hindsight, everybody would say, well, yeah, that was more fun than this. But like when you think back retroactively, there was still a lot of like, what are the Bulls doing? Are they just trying to be like, you know, are they just trying to be a second round team and be out? And then with the White Sox, you have this weird reality of they, I don't know if you want to say luck into it, because they weren't lucky. They were a very good team. But in 05, they basically win a World Series, and Reinsdorf's just been like, let me trot that out for nostalgia. See, you got you a title in 05, and that completely justifies 20 years of ineptitude with a year or two there, here and there, where they luck into a good team. And so, to me, like, that is a miserable existence. And I think far too often we ask the question of, what's the worst franchise in sports? And I think maybe that was an applicable question when basically you had the franchise model that was basically their family businesses. They just got handed down. You still see a little bit of it in the NFL. Like the Maras and the Tishes still own the Giants. The Rooney, it gets passed down from the Rooneys, the Steelers, the Browns. I presume whenever Jerry leaves the earth, although if you tell me he beats death, if you tell me there's a way to buy your way to beating death, Jerry's probably going to be candidate number one for me. But I presume that's going to stay in the family. Although now there's starting to be these weird questions of, well, when it gets handed down and there's a tax bill, can people pay the, can the kids pay the tax bill, whatnot? But I'm assuming that's going to stay in the, that's the Jones family legacy. So you see it a little bit there, but more so in baseball. And I mean, for God's sakes, the Bush family doesn't own the Cardinals anymore. Like, so when in baseball and basketball in particular, you see ownership changing hands much more frequently. And so the reason why I feel like bad franchises is an unfair question. To me, it starts with bad ownership. Like, in the end, you can usually pinpoint the bad teams and the bad franchises. There's usually, to me, a direct relationship between bad ownership and bad franchise. Now, there are, like, I never know what to do with, like, Shad Khan at the Jags, because it seems like he wants to do the right things. Like, it feels like he wants to spend the money, wants to get the right people. It feels like he's a bad hirer. And, like,
is that the White Sox issue right now?
I think the White Sox issue is purely Reinsdorf. He's just like an old miserable miser. You know what I mean? Like, he's just, it's nothing more to him than revenue. Like, I don't, in the end, because, like, you know, he's going to figure out a way to keep trotting out the 96 Bulls forever, and people just bow down and worship. And I guess you could make the argument he doesn't hire great people, but I think he doesn't hire great people by design. Like, in the end, he wants everyone just kind of reporting to him. Like, to me, James Dolan is an incompetent owner. At the same time, I think he does try to hire, like, he's like, I want to hire Phil Jackson. Like, that's not, when you hear that, that's not like something stupid, but it probably was stupid in, you know, the mid-20s, in the 2010s. So, especially when, like, basically Phil's like, I kind of want to be done. Like, you know what I mean? Like, how much is he going to roll up his sleeves? So I do think there are some examples of owners that want to be good, but they can't get out of their own way. And so it is where you realize, particularly with the Grizzlies and with Robert Parra, do I wish Parra were from here? Yeah, like, I do. But I don't really have a ton of complaints. Like, in the end, his kind of, like, we saw with the Suns when Ishbia buys the Suns. Like, he did kind of the move that probably, hand up, I would do if I bought a team, if I were ever that kind of rich. Like, you immediately start meddling. Well, when Parra bought his team, like, his kind of weird owner behavior was he wanted to practice with the team. Like, I'm fine with it. You know what I mean? Like, if that's what we got to put up with, like, so be it. Like, okay, it's a little weird photo op, but at the same time, it's like,
and
yeah.
And it didn't last too long.
No, that phase was over very quickly. I think he played, like, in an all-star game, celebrity yes. all-star game, and, like, that was quickly over with. But for the most part, the decisions that they've made have largely been sensible. Does it mean they've hit on every draft pick? No, but, like, when it came time to replace Chris Wallace, like, he believes he you know, we get to the point where let's just hand it over. Let's hand it over to Kleiman. Like, he's here. We believe in him. We've worked with him. We think he's good. Let's do that.
But don't you think a lot of that had to do, in terms of the community, they'd gotten used to Heisley being a little bit cantankerous or irascible, and they loved him being out and going on radio shows and blowing up. They loved having that kind of one-on-one connection with him. So I think they kind of missed that when Parra came along, but they got used to it.
I definitely, so like, do I wish he were more of a like public voice or whatnot? Yes. But in the end, if the trade-off is I get competent owner that seems to, he's clearly not hands off. Like, mm-hmm. It's his team. Like, and I'm not saying that you should be hands off, but it does not feel like he's Jerry Jones in terms of meddling with the roster.
No, not
and meddling with decision makers, whatnot. And to me, it's like if I have to give up having the, you know, Mark Cuban type, I'm fine with that if it means stability. Because while this season was horrific and bad, it is a completely understandable bad season.
Mm-hmm.
Your best player gets suspended for 25 games. He then gets hurt after returning for 9 games. Almost every player of significance, with the exception of Jaren, missed significant time with injury. Like, it happens. It's a disaster year. But there's no reason why the Grizzlies are not right back in the mix next year. And to me, like, that's a huge part of it. And that's, like, even when we knew they were going to stink for a while. Now, part of it's getting lucky in the lottery and getting the number 2 pick so that you can get Ja. But there are a lot of teams that go through a longer period of time of sucking than what the Grizzlies did.
Yeah. Yeah. And people are, I think we mentioned this earlier too, I think people still enjoy this run. I think they had fun last year toward the end of the year just seeing some of those guys.
Gigi helped.
Vince helped.
Yeah.
I think, and it helped him, I guess, you know, secure a spot too. So those were kind of fun stories to follow in a tough year.
Those two are fun. It's still, though, I think we'd all agree, like, last year was the first time in a while that it was like turning the game on. It was just like, I guess I got to watch this tonight.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, even in Ja's first year, like, that's not an above 500 team, but it was still fun to watch the games. Like, mm-hmm. It was something new, something exciting, and the Grizzlies should be right back to it. But I think this is kind of the more fascinating question. Would you rather have stable franchise that you kind of trust the people in place, or would you rather kind of ride, I'm trying to think who a good example would be. I used to always use the example of the Marlins, but now they've sucked for so long that they don't really apply, but like, would you rather be that team that when they show up in the playoffs, they can get the job done, but they don't show up very often, and you can basically go years without paying attention to your team? Or would you rather have the team that every single year is going to be in the mix, but maybe never ever holds a trophy?
Yeah, I think that is tough. For the most part, I think people would like the consistency because you know you're always going to be good. If you're going to have that roller coaster up and down, I mean, I wouldn't call the Patriots that. They kind of went up on the mountain and stayed there for a while.
Maybe the Rams is a decent example.
Yeah.
Like, the Rams cashed all their chips in. They win a title. They get back to the playoffs, but they've had, you know, like, they do kind of ride that wave of up and down, up and down.
And do people still come? I mean, do they still enjoy the games? Do they still show up?
They're more likely to go to Rams games than Chargers games. But L.A. is such even though you have history in L.A., it's going to take a minute for everyone to establish, like, locally that's the local team. Because L.A., A, everyone in L.A. is from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And then B, it's a town that's kind of fair weather. There's stuff to do. And you know, if the team's not good, they're not showing up.
Yeah.
But when the team's good, they do show up. Because there's a lot of people there to pull from, and mm-hmm. you can get people to go to the games. But it's like, would you rather have that existence, or would you rather have, like, the existence of – Ravens isn't a good choice because they have the same amount of titles since 2000. But, like, I think there's something to be said for the Ravens under Bisciotti where, yeah, like, you're never the best team or the team that has the best odds to win the title, even though, like, you're a one seed or whatnot. But year after year after year, they're consistently part of the discussion, and they're in the mix. And to me, that's almost a harder thing to do, especially when you consider, like, think about the amount of quarterback shuffling that they've gone through. Like, it's been they have figured it out almost each and every year. The Steelers kind of apply, although I think Bisciotti's probably overall better owner than the Rooney family. Where I give the Rooneys credit is the Rooneys seem to have figured out the right blend of get a coach and a talent acquisition guy or identifier or whatnot, have a front office and a coach that work together, and usually both are extremely competent.
It may be an underappreciated, harder thing to do in the sense that, you may go 6 or 7 years and just go two rounds, but you've got that opportunity, depending on what happens, 1 year at least, to you can make it farther if the right things fall your way.
Like, to me, it's easy to identify the type of ownership situations you don't want. Like, the easiest one is you don't want John Fisher in the A's. You don't want guy that inherits his entire wealth from his parents and is basically never spending a dime on his team in the hopes that he can get the value so low that he can move his team to somewhere else to get a new stadium. All right, you can make the arguments, well, you know, Fisher tried to get a new stadium done, but it's like, it seems likely to me those were never good faith efforts. So, like, those are the easy ones to identify.
Where do you put the Titans right now? I mean, are they in that category?
They're not quite that, because I think Amy Adams, I don't know what her last name now is, I think she's a wild card. At the same time, I do think she cares about the Titans being good, whereas John Fisher doesn't care about the A's being good.
Yeah.
Like, she may not push the right buttons, but I do think her goal and her intent is for them to be good. And although it's really, I guess, it's harder in the NFL when you have so few games.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to basically say we're willing to just suck for a good long while and in the hopes that it eventually yields a big run. With that said, it's like, okay, who are the, like, to me, kind of the low-key, the worst owners in sports are the names that don't get bandied about. Like, we can all identify Dan Snyder, bad owner.
Mm-hmm.
I'd make the argument that the Tishes and the Maras are bad owners. They've lucked into two really awesome runs that have been sandwiched by so much just dog poop that it's blinding. And they're in New York. They're high society New York. No one really goes after them. But in terms of, like, exuding competency, neither do so. But they, you know what I mean, they fly under the radar, whereas it's like everyone's going to be like, well, I'd rather have them than Jerry Jones. I don't know. I think Jerry's got more wins. Certainly he's got more, like, I mean, we can say, like, Super Bowl, you can do the Jimmy Johnson thing or whatever. It's like the Cowboys consistently over the Jerry Jones tenure have been the better franchise.
Yes.
Despite, you know,
not a lot of Super Bowl appearances.
Mm-hmm. At least this century.
Yes.
I mean, is there anyone that takes back those three from the 90s? But, like, that's kind of the question with the Grizzlies is it better to have this type of approach in which they're trying to clearly build something? They want to have a core. They want to have a culture. They want to have a group that they're bringing along and they're putting together. Rather, like, they're trying, it feels like, to put a run together than put a team together. Whereas at times in the NBA, it feels like people are just trying to, like, cash chips in, put a team together, like, let's see if we can make a run. If not, we'll figure it out.
If you have somebody that doesn't go to Grizzlies games a lot, but they're handed tickets, what do you think they enjoy most about going to a game if they don't go consistently? Is it Ja Morant's just unbelievable athletic ability?
I think it depends on, A, which game you go to.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're saying, you know, you're going to see the Warriors, you're going to see the Lakers, like, that's a different kind. Like, that's, you're going to see all-time greats. But let's just say generic team comes into town.
New Orleans.
Yeah, I think you're going to see Ja Morant.
Yeah.
And what's Ja Morant going to do?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like that, and you're going to see the Grizzlies. You're just going to the Grizzlies game. But if you're saying, like, what's going to get when you get in your seat, what are you the most excited to see? I think it's Ja Morant. I don't even really know what would be the close second.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that is also kind of the other part of this is, okay, we can do ownership, but at the same time, we oftentimes leave out, well, there's a player accountability aspect of this. Like, not only do you need Ja Morant to be good, you need Ja Morant to be on the floor.
And to be a leader.
Correct.
Yeah.
And like, there's, Lord knows how you can make fun of LeBron James. I love to do it. There's something to be said for a guy that showed up to work every single night as often as he did for as long as he did.
Yeah.
And especially in an era where it was falling out of fashion to be the guy that plays every night. And, I mean, that's kind of the other thing with Ja. It's like, beyond just, okay, what's he going to look like coming back from the injury? How many games are we getting out of him?
Mm-hmm.
Because what we've seen the last few years is it's a little bit under 65 games.
You saw the Mike Miller quote, though, his new agent, right?
I did. I will say this, though. Maybe I got my Grizzlies-colored glasses on. I am quietly bullish on this team, and particularly him, because Ja Morant with a grudge is probably the most effective form of Ja Morant.
I'm not sure what kind of influence Mike Miller will have on him, but I can tell you this. His when I was at Memphis, and they had that great team with James Wiseman and Precious Achiuwa and Lester Quinones, I do remember this, that on the bus rides to a shoot-around, all the players would be in the back of the bus kind of looking at YouTube videos. Precious Achiuwa would always walk up to Mike Miller and go over the game plan. And it was like you could see that if he, you know, if they connect, I think he can have a huge influence on someone and their approach.
And it does make you realize talent only gets you so far.
Yeah.
And that was kind of, you know, if we're going back to Hard Knocks, that was kind of Saban's point to Eberflus.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're a first-round quarterback, the talent's probably not going to be what ends up costing you. It's usually, do you want to be great? Do you have it between the ears?
Yeah.
It's usually not your ability to throw a deep out.
Yeah. Will you put in the extra time?
Correct. Or, you know, are you... I mean, I think an underrated thing that we can't really identify and we can't... It seems like we can't probably quantify it either is, particularly at quarterback, are you the guy that just makes everyone better? And I used to always use the example with Eli when all my friends would want to crap on Eli. Go look at every receiver that played with Eli. His best years were always when he played with Eli. On down the line, from Beckham to Hakeem Nicks to Mario Manningham to the other Steve Smith, all of them. Like, they all had their best years with him. It's the same thing with Brady. Like, I mean, and Peyton, the same thing. Like, how many receivers would get paid because Peyton made them look great? Same thing with Brady. It's like, all those guys, as soon as they get away from Brady, maybe the common denominator is the quarterback.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you just remember the times watching him toward the end of his career at Tampa, watching him get on people, and it was for their betterment. I mean, I think they respected that. And they may not have been used to that, a quarterback kind of get in their face.
Oh, I think they definitely weren't used to it. I mean, that's the thing.
But it made them better.
I mean, I know there's a lot of new age football people that don't like that Brady's talking about, I don't think the game's coached very well, and that I'm with Brady. Now, the problem is, I believe that the game is not getting coached properly in the sense of, we've decided the way to keep players safe is to just make the rules impossible in the defense. Whereas forever you're taught, if I got a guy crossing 15 yards on a dig route and I throw it high and leave him out to dry, that's on me. And that's my fault. Now we've just decided, well, it's the safety. Like, you can't, that's a dangerous play. We got to get that out of the sport.
Yeah.
But there is this weird question for me of, okay, if we accept that's the way the game's going to be legislated now, should you be taking advantage of all the rules? Like, to me, it's a lot like, I personally think in college football, the way people are running RPOs is cheating, honestly. Like, when you can hold a play fake and this force the safety, I mean, he's sitting there seeing run, and force him to come down because he's watching the offensive line block 6 yards down the field, I don't think you should be able to pull the ball back from the belly of the running back and throw a deep post. Like, that's cheating. That's not football. Linemen are downfield. Like, you should not be able to do that.
It's not clever play calling?
No. But the problem is, we decided we're cool with it.
Yeah.
And so, this is kind of the Jimbo Fisher problem. And, you know, is that Jimbo's fault for not... Like, I actually think if you look at it with Jimbo Fisher, almost every single quarterback he had dating back to Florida State, heck, dating back to Matt Mock when he was at LSU, almost every quarterback he had not only got drafted, got overdrafted. Because they were all extremely prepared to play. But in the day and age of we can outscore you, well, that's not really effective. And you can sit there and go, I don't believe that's teaching football the right way. But like to me, I guess like maybe if that's like if you want to believe that, like go coach high school.
Scouting is fascinating.
Yes.
As the game changes, the scouts have to change and have to know what to look for. It is.
I think scouting quarterbacks is impossible right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it used to be you knew a guy that knew what he was looking at. Guy that knew the field, knew where his guys were, threw on time. Now, everything is just schemed to just hit a big play. And it's like, I don't know if that's like really knowing how to play quarterback. That's like knowing how to hit a shot play. But like that's kind of the whole thing that I've always struggled with. But it kind of comes back to, like, this might be a question Memphis has to explore in the future. I hope they don't. But would you rather be someone who's outgunned at the highest level, knowing that you don't really have a shot to compete, or would you rather be the kings of the kiddie table?
Yeah. And you know what? That doesn't. I mean, you've wanted so long and so hard to be part of the big table that I think you're gonna. You would never even entertain that.
I think so too. But does anyone at Cincinnati look like they're having fun right now?
Yeah. I know.
I mean, and
if you're Vanderbilt and you kind of were grandfathered into it, you're kind of used to it.
And Vanderbilt's kind of built this culture of we don't really care about football, so we're trying to compete in the other stuff.
Yeah.
But they're not even really doing that. But I don't know, the kind of the way that I look at it is it's not really fair to say would you rather be, you know, the kings of AAA or be essentially schedule wins in the majors? Because the problem is that's not really the choice. The choice is do you want to be a part of the world that financially is going to make it much like there's just the financial gap between being in the majors, if you will, and being in AAA is going to be so extreme that it's going to cause other questions of, like, can we really have all the sports? Can we do all this? Can we compete in all that? And so, inevitably, I think the answer is always going to be, well, you take the majors, even if you're team 60 of 60. But, man, losing sucks. You know what I mean?
Well, if you could tell a fan at Memphis, for the next 5 years, you're going to be in the playoffs. But if you end up being promoted to the ACC or the Big 12, you're going to be middle of the pack or the lower half of that pack. What are they going to take? We're getting back to that same thing. I think you're taking the playoff. You think so? If they know, I don't know. I mean, I still think it's been such a long.
I think this is a better one than the Florida State question.
It's been such a long haul and a long struggle to get into that.
I think you're right. Maybe the right answer is you take the ACC or the Big 12 in the sense that, okay, maybe this isn't better for the next couple of years, maybe even the next decade. But overall, if your job is to worry about the actual legacy of the school, you should take your lumps because maybe eventually you figure it out. But the only path to sustainability long term is that.
Yeah, and the other unknown factor is can you recruit better to Memphis down the road?
Sure, because of the league.
Yeah,
SMU found it out. Now I would also argue SMU found it out because when they got in the league, they got like $150 million in 48 hours.
Yeah, that's
that might have led to some recruiting. All right, let's take a quick break. Team USA is in action. Let's ask Eric if he thinks when we see the Olympics in 2028 in L.A. if we'll see a Grizzly on the U.S. Olympic team. We'll discuss that and more when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Eric, currently Team USA down with about 3.5 minutes to go to Serbia. I guess maybe it is true that it's hard to beat the same team three times. They're down 12.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
I was working, so I did not get a chance to watch. That's crazy. Look, man, Serbia's got a guy in the middle. It's pretty good, you know? He knows how to play against those guys. And I thought Steve Kerr said it best a couple weeks ago. We've got to play with more passion. I get the friendlies, the South Sudan game, but I don't know. I still subscribe to the theory that, yes, you're playing for your country. Yes, to all of us that are not that high, that level of basketball player or athlete, are sitting there going, what greater honor is there? But when you're making $50-60 million a year being an NBA player, that putting a bunch of guys together that are superstars, that's why a guy like Derek White I thought was a great fit, because they're guys that'll fill a role. You have to have role players. And when you don't play together ever and then you just kind of get thrown together, you play a handful of games and, you know, who knows how if this Serbian team's been together like this. I'd have to look at it, but that's the advantage the international squads have. They have the same, like, 12, 14 guys every 5-6 years, and they know each other. And all it takes is one bad day once you get to medal round, one day where you're not locked in, one day where you think you can just show up, put the jersey on, and you're going to win. And you can get caught. And if they get caught, it's going to be a – there's going to be a lot of people wondering what happened. Why did Jaylen Brown not be on the team? Why was Jaylen Brown not on the team? Why was this guy not on the team?
Yep.
Why did you send this guy and not that guy? And there'll be a lot of second guessing, because let's be honest, in the United States, if you don't win gold, you didn't win. You didn't win.
Oh, I 1,000% agree. I know you'll be stunned to believe this.
I don't love that, but
Jokic has played every second so far.
Oh, of course. Because look at it this way, too. So this in similar fashion, when the Grizzlies had that first breakout season where they got their first division championship and they were the two seed, they won a lot of games being the team that was the hunter, being the team that was trying to prove their worth in the NBA, being the young up-and-coming team going against veteran teams and just outplaying them. I'll never forget in the year we didn't travel, that COVID year, where we weren't traveling, we're watching, the Lakers were really good, and we're like, okay, this is going to be a real test to see how good this group is. This is going to be a real test to see where, so the Jaws second year, where this team fits in the pecking order. And what we saw was, okay, they went in there and they absolutely throttled the Lakers to the point where LeBron was like running into Desmond Bain saying, you young guys don't know. And it was, they were the hungry team. You get out of that year, you come back, and all of a sudden, you're the team everybody's going after. You're the team everybody's going, we're going to get them. We're going to get them. And that was the non-travel year was the year they made the play-in tournament.
Yeah.
The next year when they won
that was the Utah series where they gentlemen sweep. So remember they stole game one and then lost four straight.
Yeah, Donovan Mitchell didn't play game one. They lost four straight. But that year, what I'm talking about, where they didn't travel, they were the team sneaking up on teams.
Yeah.
They still kind of did it the next year and caught some teams like, they just had a lucky run. Then that year they lost to the Lakers in the first round when they were the two seed again a couple seasons ago, you saw young teams like Oklahoma City, like Houston, like teams that were not Sacramento, teams that were trying to prove they belonged, they emptied the cupboard against the Grizzlies. All right, we're gonna throw everything at them. We know we can beat our next opponent or whatever. You never know, but
yeah,
you feel like you have an advantage in your next game. So De'Aaron Fox tonight's going to play 40 minutes if he has to, because he wants to prove he's better than Ja in his mind. That's what Serbia looks at, and everybody else looks at the USA as. You beat the USA, you go home to a hero's welcome, especially if you beat them to go to a gold medal game. Even if you don't win the gold, you beat the United States. To Serbia, that's a massive deal. To Spain, that's a massive deal. To France, that's a massive deal. I mean, imagine if France goes to the gold medal game now, they win it because, they beat Germany today,
yep,
right?
Yep, that was an upset.
So France goes to the gold medal game and wins the gold medal in Paris. Those dudes will never buy a glass of red wine in that country again, ever.
No, Burgundy and Bordeaux forever.
That's life-changing events for those guys.
Eric, this is Phil Stukenborg. I was gonna ask you this. Since you've been around Jokic for all these years watching him play, we were talking about this stat in the group stage game. When he was on the floor, the game was even. When he was off the floor for 9 minutes in the group stage game, the U.S. outscored Serbia by 26.
Yep.
What an impact that one player can have.
So I've told this story, and it's good to talk to you, Phil. It's been a long time since we've chatted, so
yeah.
Glad to hear your voice again, and I hope all's well. I remember being in Denver a couple years ago. We were out the night. We were playing the Nuggets on a Tuesday. So it was a Monday night. We were near our hotel. We were going to watch Monday night football because the Packers were playing, and I'm a big Packers fan. And Steven Adams rolls in, and we've had a dinner or a malted beverage with Steven on occasion, and he walked in and said, he's like, hey, how you guys doing? And we're like, hey, great, have a seat, join us. And I was like, he's like, okay. And I was like, what were you doing? He goes, oh, I was watching film. I was like, oh, okay, cool. And he goes, yeah, man, it's tough. They're good. And I said, yeah, Denver's real good. Denver's amazing. It's the year they won the title. And I said, hey, do you want a beer? And he says, no. And I said, what do you mean, no? And he goes, no, I got to go back and watch film. I said, dude, you said you just came from watching film. He goes, bro, it's Jokic. And I go, okay, I'll play along. What do you mean? And he says, I can tell you what every other center in the league is going to do in certain situations when I watch film on them. I know what they're going to do. Doesn't mean I'm going to stop it, but I know what the move is, and I know how to try to do my best to make it harder to execute or stop it. Fair enough. He says, with Jokic, I have no idea. No clue. I could watch hours and hours. I'm trying to figure anything out that will tip me off what he's planning on doing, except when I watch film, it becomes more apparent that he is just as likely to throw a ball behind his head to a cutter for an assist as he is to take a one-legged fadeaway or drive his shoulder into your sternum and go to the basket. You just don't know. He's that talented. And when Mike Miller was in Denver at the end of his career, caught up with him, and it was when Jokic and Nurkic were rookies. And I asked him, I said, you got two good young bigs. He goes, yep. And I go, what do you think of Nurkic? Like, good player, big body, really athletic for his size, super skilled, going to be a great player. I said, all right, what do you think of Jokic? I said, I played one full court, 3-on-3 game with him because he was out of the rotation. I said, and? He goes, and the next day I went to the coaches and said, he does not belong with us. He belongs with you. He says, if he keeps on his path, he will be a multiple-time All-Star, probable MVP. And I looked at Mike and I said, that is a bold statement. And he said, Eric, as sure as I know a lot about this game, I know that kid is going to be a massive star. And obviously he was right. Well, he's that talented. He's just that good.
I mean, the other part of the Steven Adams part of the story, I think Steven's a guy that would have like a Guinness after a workout. Like, that shows you just how fearful he was.
They made a beer after him at Ghost River, for goodness sakes.
By the way, did you see the story today? I guess it was going around on a podcast. Garnett was talking crap to a young Steven Adams, and Steven pretended not to speak English.
Which is hysterical, by the way. That's so Steven Adams.
My first question is, did Garnett know that they speak English in New Zealand? Like, that was like the other part. Like, did it work?
Yeah, that's honestly a great question because I don't know how much about New Zealand these guys know.
Yeah.
But look, that guy was such a joy to have around, and I wish him all the success and nothing but the best in the future. Hopefully he plays again. But I just recall the first time we were in an elevator at the team hotel in L.A., and I hadn't met him officially yet. And he had worked with one of our former PR guys, Matt Tumbleson. I talked to Matt, and I said, Matt, how is he? He's like, once he knows you, he's a great guy. And he shook my hand, and I looked, and my hand was gone. It just disappeared. It was no longer in the picture. And I was like, well, can I have my hand back now? He's just massive, right? So fast forward, we're going to a Brewers game in Milwaukee. It was the first preseason game. And the Brewers happened to be playing. We're in our team hotel. There's a pool table in the front. And Steven goes, oh, you want to shoot a game? And I was like, sure, I'll play with you. And I make like three shots, and he looks at me, gives me this stern look, says, you didn't tell me you were good. And I'm like, oh, okay, I think I missed the next eight shots. Not because I wanted to, because I was terrified if I made them what he could do to me. Not that he ever would. And he's like, well, where are you guys going? I said, well, we're going to go to a baseball game. He goes, I want to check one of those out. Maybe I'll come with you. I said, we'll save you a seat. Sees me the next day. It was the night he signed his contract extension. And he says, hey, I'm sorry I didn't make the game. I said, yeah, you had 51 million reasons not to be there. So you're good, dude. Congratulations. He said, thanks.
Wait, Eric, are you telling me there's not a beer named after you?
There is not. There is not.
There's something. What do you got, wings? Don't we have something, a sauce?
No. Yeah. This is a point of contention with me and the owner of Ghost River right now. It was one of my closest friends. And I love he and his wife to death. They're wonderful people. They just opened a beautiful new facility, or they're about to in September, the grand opening of the extra room at the brewery on Main. We were sitting around one Monday night, and they gave us boneless wings, and they were buffalo style, and they always had Hawaiian rolls. And so he's closed on Mondays, but he's, again, big Packers fan, so am I. My son and I are there. And I said, bring out some rolls. And I start putting the boneless nuggets in the roll.
There we go.
And he goes, what are you doing?
Sliders,
I said,
baby.
I'm making a mini slider. He goes, what do you mean? I said, well, you take basically the equivalent of a boneless chicken nugget, because they were good size, and you put it on a Hawaiian roll. You think we can sell those on the menu? I said, I would be shocked if they weren't one of your top sellers. A week later, there's the Hasseltine sliders on the menu. And then I go back in about a week ago, and they're gone. Now they're called the Hawaiian sliders. I'm like, what
do you think? You'd be asking for a finder's fee? Little NIL?
The NIL deal ran out. I got cut. And they said, yeah, we got a new kitchen manager. He changed it. And I was like, well, he needs to go.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
He needs to leave.
Kitchen manager's a dime a dozen. Everybody knows that.
No, I did have an old fashioned named after me, a black cherry old fashioned at A. Schwab. I think it's still on the menu. I don't know how many people go in there for a cocktail, but it's good. When they make it right, it's delicious.
It always seems to taste better when your name's on it. I learned that from Calkins.
This is true, but anytime that happens, I know guys like Pine. Gary had a sushi roll named after him. Calkins had the everything bagel sandwich at the coffee shop. And
Republic, I think.
It's beyond, like, humbling. Really is. I mean, like, Jeff, you guys know me well enough to know I don't walk around and go, hey, do you know who I am? I'm flattered when anybody ever says.
No, you usually don't want people to know who you are.
Yeah, I'm like, I recognize your voice, and you're like, okay, it's like when you're coaching a baseball camp and their kid, like, does something completely outlandish. You're like, hey, come on, don't do that. Like, do it this way. I'm like, oh, I know who
I've
you
heard
are.
That.
Now I'm the one yelling at their kid. That's where it gets dicey.
So I said we were going to ask this of you. I don't really think it's... Presuming Ja is healthy in 2028, he's on the Olympic team, right?
I would think so.
Is there anyone else in his generation that has a Nike deal?
Athletic. Well, he's too talented, too athletic. There's just no rhyme or reason to think that... I don't know. We don't know who's coming up. I mean, Anthony Edwards is... You don't generally take players Anthony Edwards' age. So think of the draft class... You know, maybe a Cooper Flagg is in contention, but he's a big. Who are the young guards aside from Edwards and point guards, let alone, that are there? He is De'Aaron Fox.
So
they're
Fox,
kind of the next
Fox,
generation.
Halliburton, I guess, yeah.
Halliburton. But again, that's 4 years wear and tear on these guys, and where are they? Halliburton's a little bit older. And what happens over the next four seasons? That's the thing. If you're healthy the next four seasons, hard for me to imagine he doesn't don the USA jersey and the Grizzlies have an American Olympic player for the first time.
Yeah, and the total roster could actually be a lot, right? Because if you think about it, I still think Jaren's going to have an outside shot because of what we're talking about, age and bigs. There's a shot for him to get back and, you know, I think he got scapegoated on the FIBA team, but I still think he's going to be a part of the conversation. But Edie's going to have a legitimate chance to be on the Canadian team, if not almost assuredly
sure.
on the Canadian team. I mean, what? We could see at least three?
Yeah. I mean, if they're all there, like Santi could very well still be playing for Spain if he's still a Grizzly at that point. Again, that's what you don't know. What does 4 years look like? That's a long time. But, yeah, I think it's very possible. I think it's possible if Desmond continues to grow and he continues to be able to score on all three levels that he becomes a candidate because he can do a little bit of everything. He plays physical. He can play defense on the perimeter. And if you leave that guy alone, forget it. I mean, that threes are valuable. We see that. So there's going to be a big changeover. I don't think you'll see Anthony Davis. I don't think, obviously, you'll see Steph Curry or LeBron James. The guys that have been there over the years, where will they be? What will there? I don't think that you'll see Derek White back on the squad or Drew Holiday either. I mean, nothing against those guys, but especially if you don't win, they'll be turnover quickly, very quickly.
I had the doomsday scenario yesterday. I was in my group chat, and we were making fun of. We have a couple of Lakers fans in there. There's no chance LeBron gets Bronny on that team, right? Just saying.
Come on. Look, I don't put anything past anybody.
I know, that's the problem. I told Phil, the problem is, do I really believe that's going to happen? No. But we can also acknowledge it's not a 0% chance.
No, because Michael Redd, I believe, either made an Olympic team or certainly a Team USA, and he was a second-round pick out of Ohio State.
Well, who was the Spurs replacement last time in Olympics? Remember, when everybody was dropping out of Tokyo, and Pop just took a guy from his team. Is it Keon?
2020.
The guy played in Kentucky, I think.
Yeah, Keldon Johnson.
Yes, yeah. I keep wanting to say Keon Johnson, but no, it's Keldon Johnson. I know there is a Keon Johnson, but that's a different guy.
There's
a legitimate argument that Keldon Johnson's the worst Olympian of the professional era.
You're still an Olympian.
Yeah, no, I agree. Nobody's listen, that medal hangs forever.
Yeah, as I told a couple kids that made an All-Star team, say, hey, you might not be the best player on this All-Star team, but
still an All-Star.
You're still an All-Star when other kids would kill to have that jersey.
No, I mean, that's kind of that's the other thing. Can we just not play 3-on-3? Like, if we're not going to send good players, like, why are we even doing it?
I didn't even know it happened. I'm sorry.
I watched one three-on-three
game, and I'm like, this is silly.
You and I did the same thing. Like, because Connor was thinking, like, I think this is gonna catch on because it's fast and whatnot. I was like, I could not be more out on this. But basically, Windhorst came out and basically said, like, FIBA doesn't want the U.S. having to play with NBA guys. And so clearly It's designed to, like, have the lesser basketball nations have something to strive for. But the problem is the same, like, the teams that are successful in it are the same teams, minus Team USA. But it's like, if we're not going to send, like, a truly competitive team over there, why are we sending a team at all? Like, why do we have to compete in it?
Right. Right, exactly. I don't know. I mean, because you're the United States.
Right,
you're
like,
the best basketball.
Think about in these terms. Like, you and I were talking about a little bit earlier. You can make the case that they don't have the best 12 NBA guys, and that's probably almost assuredly of the best 12 American NBA. Like, that's, but they were trying to get the best team. Like, with 3-on-3, they're not even trying to get the best team. They're just basically saying, like, who wants to go? And so it's like, why are we even doing that?
Well, I think they didn't. I mean, I don't think they got the best 12, not because guys didn't want to go, because they could have gotten other guys that seemingly wanted to go that didn't get selected. I think, and they were like, oh, well, Steve Kerr will find the right selection process. And okay, that's fine. But a coach has got to coach who he thinks can fit what he does in that system. Is it always right? No. Is Steve Kerr still a great basketball coach? Absolutely. He really is. Is Steve Kerr the same level of basketball coach if he doesn't have Curry, Thompson, and then made Draymond Green what he is?
No.
That probably not a, you know, a 700 winning percentage, but is Greg Popovich without getting very lucky in the draft, but then also developing some guys like Ginobili and Parker.
Sure.
They were able to keep those guys together, but the anchor was a number one overall pick. If they had never had Tim Duncan, are they the same?
No.
As Jerry Sloan told Rob Fisher once,
from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.